In an attempt to promote healthy eating habits, Democratic lawmakers introduced a new bill in 2021 that would direct the Cuomo administration to develop state food standards that would apply to the food and beverages purchased, prepared, served, and sold by state government entities and on state property, including public schools, roadside rest stops, and state parks. For more on the legislation and the broader campaign to get healthy food into the bellies of New Yorkers, we're joined by Jesse Silverman, Policy Associate and the Mark and Sushma Palmer Public Health Advocacy Fellow at CSPI. Welcome to the show, Jesse.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this bill seems to have two main components. First, the creation of a state food standard, and then implementation of that standard. In terms of the first part, creating that standard, what would be prioritized by the State Department of Health and Office of General Services?
The bill specifies certain instructions to the Department of Health and Office of General Services as they're putting together these standards. They are to be science-based and consistent with the federal government's healthy eating advice, the Dietary Guidelines for Americans. They would need to support purchasing from New York State producers to the greatest extent possible, and they can be adapted for different settings. So the state covers a lot of different institutions and venues, as you alluded to earlier. So the standards for prisons, for example, could be different from the standards for public universities because they serve different populations and have different needs and circumstances.
When it comes to balancing all these different priorities, are there certain aspects that you think should take preference? For example, is it more important to emphasize promoting healthy eating versus sustainability? Or are locally grown products more important than thinking about health risks? How do you balance it all?
I can really only speak to the priorities of CSPI. Mm-hmm. And we really focus on preventing chronic disease in the human population, although we often join together with partners to promote sustainability and other values in the food system. So the focus of this bill is on human health and nutrition. And so we know that people aren't eating enough fruits and vegetables. They're not eating enough whole grains. They're generally eating too many highly processed foods that are high in saturated fat, sodium, and added sugar. And so that's where we would really like to see these standards focused should the bill pass.
The bill says the standards should also reflect the preferences of the population being served. So how should that manifest itself? Because I think that, you know, what a fourth grader, say, might prefer might run counter to those healthy eating goals.
Yeah, so that piece of the bill, the goal of that is to encourage state institutions to offer culturally appropriate menus and cuisines. And so making sure that, you know, if you're serving a mostly Hispanic population, for example, that you're not only serving Western foods.
Oh, that's interesting. Is there any thought that that's what's happening currently, or is that more about preventing a problem before it might arise?
One of the other pieces of the bill is to direct the health department to undertake sort of a needs assessment of the different food purchasing and service practices of all the different state agencies, because it's really hard to get all that information from the outside, and it would take a long time. So hopefully that will happen. And that sort of information will be gathered when this law hopefully at some point is rolled out.
So the second component of this legislation is the implementation aspect of this standard, which, based on the legislation, seems like it would be very broadly rolled out. Can you walk us through where exactly it would take effect, what that sort of rule of thumb is? Is it really just any basically public entity in the state where this would apply to? And what would it actually mean for the food being served or sold? For example, would the state be dictating exactly like, here's what you can sell, or would it be more about a broad parameter?
The standards would apply to any food purchased, served, or sold on state property or in state-funded or administered institutions and programs. So if it's a county government facility, for example, that probably wouldn't be subject to these standards. So only facilities and programs that are run by the state. So it would include as varied settings as state employee cafeterias and vending machines, state prisons, public schools, and state universities, senior centers that get state funding, state hospitals, state food assistance programs like the Hunger Prevention and Nutrition Assistance Program. And I think a good model to think about how this might look like in practice are New York City's food standards. New York City was the first jurisdiction to establish nutrition standards for all foods purchased and served by city agencies in 2008. And so their standards are very strong and considered a model for the rest of the country. And they do things like set limits on sodium for different kinds of products, like bread. They establish that all which grain products need to be whole grain. They talk about for different settings, you know, depending on whether it's a school or correctional facility, you know, how many servings of fruits and vegetables the population should get each day. It doesn't get as specific as like establishing the menu. That's up to the institution to do themselves, but it does set some parameters.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about efforts to promote healthy eating at state government entities and on state property. And our guest is Jesse Silverman, Policy Associate and the Mark and Sushma Palmer Public Health Advocacy Fellow at CSPI. What's been the effect of the standard in New York City, and what do you envision as the potential benefit if this sort of standard was applied statewide? Would this have health consequences for thousands, potentially millions of New Yorkers?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we know that the state serves food through various institutions to over 6 million New York residents, and some of them rely on state institutions for a large portion of their diet. So the more food that they're getting through state facilities, like incarcerated people, for example, the more of a health impact it would have to shift the food environment in those settings. So I think the potential for impact is enormous. And in the city, they've been implementing this policy for over a decade now, and they've seen reductions in saturated fat, in sodium, in added sugars served through city facilities. There is a research paper that they published a number of years ago that demonstrated that. And the level of compliance among city agencies is really high. So it's been a really successful effort.
One of the appealing aspects of some of the food that's not so good for us, besides tasting good, is the fact that it often can be cheaper than some of the more healthy alternatives. And that was a concern that was brought up during a Senate committee meeting where they expressed reservations about the potential for increasing costs and whether this would just be impractical for certain institutions. What do you think about that issue of cost? And do you think there would be more upfront costs that would have to be shouldered?
Well, what I can say is that the state of Washington was the first state to adopt this sort of policy. In their Department of Corrections, for example, they were able to align their menus with the Dietary Guidelines for Americans without increasing any costs. You know, the idea of this policy is really to shift money that the state is already spending on food from less healthy to healthier options. And a report from the American Farmland Trust and New York Academy of Medicine found that New York State programs and institutions spend almost $1 billion of New Yorkers' tax dollars annually on food. And we know that this could be much better invested in healthy and minimally processed food that's produced locally, which would not only benefit the health of the eaters, but also the health of the local economy.
There have been some high-profile examples of efforts to limit access to certain unhealthy foods, and those efforts have produced a serious backlash. If this legislation was to move forward, do you think there would have to be other, I guess, components of it to ensure that it's a welcome change? For example, does there need to be some sort of educational component or any other sort of buy-in from the people who are going to be eating this food to ensure that they're on board with this and don't revolt prior to even giving the food a chance?
Yeah, well, first I want to say that I think a lot of that pushback comes from the food industry, more so than the public. And I think that the public is, to a large extent, already bought in. We polled 1,000 New York State residents last fall for their opinions on the food served by state-supported institutions and programs. 71% said that the food that state-supported programs and institutions serve should include mostly or only healthy options. 88%, so that's almost 9 out of 10, said they would support the state adopting guidelines to serve more healthy foods. And 65%, so almost two-thirds, said they would support the state adopting guidelines to serve fewer unhealthy foods. So I think New Yorkers are ready for this.
So you think if this was implemented and the state took a year to come up with a standard and put this into cafeterias all over the state, regardless of the setting, that it would be just warmly embraced by the eaters?
There have been a lot of different jurisdictions and institutions that have adopted similar policies over the years. And so we have a really good sense of what the best practices are for increasing acceptance of standards like this. And so the health department would work with state agencies to adjust their recipes and do taste tests and survey the population in that agency to find out what healthy items they want to see.
So this legislation and its focus is really about creating healthy eating habits by limiting choice. Are there ways that you think can promote healthy eating decisions from a perspective where the people are choosing to do that? Is that about creating habits when people are younger? Is it about education for older people? What's your perspective on just making people choose the right thing on their own? How do you make that happen?
Well, I want to push back on what you,
sure,
on the premise of your question a little bit, because I think that a large part of this bill is about expanding choice. I think in a lot of just government facilities in general, there are not many healthy options. And most people, when you ask them, say that they want to be eating healthier and they want it to be easier to eat healthily. They want to have more healthy options. And so that is one of the most important goals of this bill. And so
would the unhealthy options remain, though? I mean, it was my impression from this bill that, you know, the sugary drinks and the unhealthy desserts, that those would be gone. It wouldn't just be about more healthy options. It would be healthy options in lieu of the unhealthy options.
Well, it's definitely a goal to shift the mix of products to more healthy options, for sure. But it doesn't spell out exactly what the standards would be. And so what exactly the limitations would be on less healthy products would be left to the Department of Health.
So the Chipwich and the ice cream vending machine on the third floor of the Capitol may still survive if this legislation became law?
Again, that'll be up to the Department of Health.
Right. I got to write Zucker a letter in case that happens. Well, and so then I guess back to the other question, though, about promoting the good choices. So when people do have the option of, you know, a sugary drink versus water or some sort of natural juice, how do you get people in that mindset where they automatically gravitate towards the healthier option?
Marketing is really, really powerful. And the sugary drink industry is really, really good at marketing. So that needs to be limited, first of all, so that, you know, some of the pressure to consume sugary drinks is removed. And then there are other ways that you can adjust the food environment to make healthier options the default and the easy choice. If you're thinking about, say, a vending machine on public property, something really simple you can do is put the healthier drinks at eye level and put the sugary drinks in the bottom of the machine, and that encourages people to choose the healthier options. You can also ensure that healthier options are as affordable as the less healthy options. If you're in a cafeteria setting, you can put the healthy options first at the front of the line. In restaurants, you know, there are ways that you can design the menu to make healthier options the default. So there are a lot of nudges to help people eat healthier without thinking too much about it.
Are our eating habits set in stone at a certain point in our life, or are we able to make substantial changes, say, in our 20s, 30s, 40s?
There is definitely a lot of habit forming that happens early on in life. And the more that you can establish healthy habits as a child, the better off you're going to be. But people definitely can change their habits and eat better as adults, especially if the environment is not undermining them.
Well, we've been speaking with Jessie Silverman. She's a policy associate and the Mark and Sushma Palmer Public Health Advocacy Fellow at CSPI. Jessie, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks again for having me.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.